Welcome to Mobile Estate Planning with your host, Michael Bailey. Over a decade ago, attorney Michael Bailey turned his attention to estate law after he recognized the unacceptable number of adults without proper end-of-life planning. Michael recognizes that many of his clients have difficulty finding the time for making a proper estate plan. That's why he became the Mobile Estate Planner. He will go to wherever you are to assist you with your estate planning, including writing wills, trusts, and giving you the information you need to avoid probate. Now, ATX Ask the Experts presents Mobile Estate Planning with your host, Michael Bailey.
All right, good afternoon. Welcome to Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey here on 560KLV, the source. Also heard on 100.7 FM, 95.3 FM, 1220 AM, 560thesource.com, and the TuneIn app. Phone number to talk to us on air is 303-477-5600. And my direct line is 720-394-6887. So, talk about estate planning because, of course, we're going to talk about estate planning. Just a quick update on Puppy Dog. Puppy Dog is learning that going potty outside is a good thing. She hasn't quite grasped that inside is not a good thing. So, you know, we're trying to figure out all that stuff. But, you know, Puppy Dog is here. My son was apparently very sad about the Puppy Dog who left us last night. And so he was very sad, and so he got to go. He was... I came home from some stuff last night, and I'm like, so why is Scylla's box, you know, her box that contains her cremated remains out? So like, oh, well, Carter wanted to hold Scylla. So, you know, holding the box and things like that. And last week we talked about pet trusts. And I actually had people this last week who were saying, oh, so does a pet trust have to be a completely separate trust? And I said, no. A pet trust can be a sub-trust or, you know, just part of a revocable trust or part of an irrevocable trust. It's just, you know, specifically set up to take care of pets. And then I had somebody the other day who said, well, what different type of trusts are there? I thought, you know, there's a lot of different type of trusts. I mean, you know, you can always reduce things down to, okay, so there's two types of trusts. There's a revocable trust and an irrevocable trust. And then that's it. There's also, you know, it's like, there's two types of people, those who can extrapolate from incomplete data. And so, you know, I was talking about different types of trusts. And for those who didn't get that, if you can't extrapolate from incomplete data, then you're in the second category. Yeah, small joke, not funny, apparently. I'm getting blank stares, got nothing. Still, anyhow, so we go, we've got, so it's like, what type of trusts are there? There's a revocable trust, there's an irrevocable trust. A revocable trust is one that you can change, amend, or revoke at any time throughout your lifetime. At least in Colorado, revocable trusts do not provide asset protection. So if you've got, if you have a revocable trust, and that revocable trust takes your, you put your assets in there, and then you end up needing Medicaid, or you get sued, and somebody's coming after your assets, or your teenager is driving down the road and, you know, loses control of a car in a snowstorm and crashes into somebody else. You know, all of these type of things. If that happens, your revocable trust does not provide asset protection. Now, asset protection is sometimes. It's, you know, there's trade-offs to asset protection, and you get asset protection in an irrevocable trust. A lot of times an irrevocable trust becomes a third party, trust where you give up ownership and control over your assets, and you have a third party trustee. Now that third party trustee can be, a child, or it can be like an independent institution, like a bank or a professional fiduciary. There's lots of different options that are available for that third-party trustee. But that's one of the trade-offs, is that if you're going to create a legal wall of separation between you and your assets using an irrevocable trust, you want to have that irrevocable trust be administered by a third party. And you know, part of that is that then you can't just demand your own, you know, that your assets be distributed out to you. Whereas in a revocable trust, usually you're the person who created the trust, you are the trustee who's in charge of the trust, and you are the primary beneficiary of the trust. So if you created the trust, you're in charge of the trust assets, and you're the primary beneficiary, it's treated as if it's they're still your assets. And so you know, you can access them at any time, you can use them at any time for any purpose, and because of that, you have all of these different ideas and things, and you know, you don't get asset, it doesn't, you know, your assets are still available if you're found liable for something. But a revocable trust can be very useful. So like if you write a revocable trust that has a pet trust inside of it, then upon your death, the trust will use that money to take care of your pets. If you have a revocable trust that holds on to money for the use of other, for your minor children. So you have a revocable trust, you die, trust holds on to the assets, you know, it pays for the expenses of your minor children until such time as you, your children are no longer minors, or however you choose the distribution schedule. That can be very useful and helpful. I have a client who claimed that they were a very private person, so they didn't want their assets to, you know, to go through the probate process, because the probate process is, once you file a will with the court, it becomes a public record and anybody can go look at it and things like that. So they wanted the trust to be able to you know, keep their affairs private. And I said, well, you know, that is true. If your trust gets challenged and if your trust gets challenged and that trust is going to be, you know, it's going to be brought into the light of a probate court, well, then it's out in the open. So you know, you want to, you know there is still a possibility it could become out in the open, but you know, just have things like that. So it's one of those things that you just got a bunch of, you have to think about what you want to do and think about what's best for you. And you know, certainly that's a discussion that we can have together, because I was talking with somebody who, you know, they want to know the difference between a will and a trust, and I was talking to them about that. And then they wanted to know the difference between different types of trusts, and so I was talking to them about that, and so on and so forth. And finally, she just looks at me, and you know, this is a woman who, highly educated woman, actually a doctor, and said, "It's just all so confusing. I don't know how you keep it all straight." I'm like, "You operate on people, and you work with people's hearts. That would be ridiculously confusing to me." You know, I mean, like, yeah, I get that there's, you know, four chambers in a heart, and it pumps blood. But I wouldn't have the slightest clue to go about how to fix a heart or how to make it work better or things like that. You know, we do different things. And she seemed to understand that. She seemed to grasp that was a good thing. So, you know, we talked about it. So you are listening to Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey here on 560 KLZ The Source, also heard on 100.7 FM, 560thesource.com, the TuneIn app, 95.3 FM, 1220 AM. Or if you want to come sit in the studio, there's a couple open chairs, if you know where the studio is. Phone number to talk to me on the air is 303-477-5600. And my direct line is 720-394-6887. Now, in these, inside either a revocable or an irrevocable trust, there are different things that you can do in there. I mean, I was talking to somebody the other day about how we'd want to create a conduit trust or an accumulation trust, both of which are IRA stretch trusts. And they're like, "Oh, is that a separate trust for my IRA money?" And I said, "No, it's not. It can be incorporated into your normal trust." Now, there is such a thing as a standalone retirement trust, where you have a standalone IRA trust, that its only purpose is to take your IRA and to have that IRA money be distributed out according to the necessary rules of the things, of the IRS rules, so that you can minimize taxes on your IRAs and passing those IRAs along to your kids. Now, you can accomplish a similar thing by just using a stretch IRA or an inherited IRA without a trust. But a lot of times people who have different types of assets and multiple types of assets where they'll have both real estate and IRA and an investment account, you know, we're kind of trying to consolidate everything in one spot when we create a trust so that, you know, it's all in one spot and everything goes where it needs to go and so on and so forth. That type of thing can be accomplished in a trust. So you don't necessarily want to have, I mean, sometimes it might make sense to have a standalone IRA trust. Sometimes it doesn't make sense. You know, it all depends on what you want to do. And you can put a standalone, you can either have a standalone IRA stretch trust, or you can have an IRA stretch trust that talks about how you're supposed to deal with IRA assets and other qualified types, you know, it's IRAs, 401ks, 403bs, you know, all those different types of plans. And then, so you can work on all of that. And then you have your, and you do that inside of an irrevocable or an irrevocable trust. And, you know, another big one that comes up a lot of times is a special needs trust. Now, a special needs trust is for a special needs person. And this is a person who usually has some sort of disability. A lot of times it's a mental disability. Sometimes it's a physical disability. But mostly, you know, we're mostly concerned about mental disabilities because people with physical disabilities, they're usually fully capable of handling their own financial affairs. But sometimes a person who has a physical disability may also be supported by some sort of government program. And if you have a government program that's paying for things and then you get a big lump sum of assets, if there's an asset requirement for that government program, then it can kick you off the government program. So as an example, Medicaid has a $2,000 limit. So if you have more than $2,000, you have more assets and you would no longer qualify for Medicaid. Now with Medicaid, there are exempt assets and non-exempt assets and some assets that count against you and others that don't. So you have to do an analysis of what type of assets you have. But we go and we say, okay, well, we can have we can take a look and see what we've got. So, you know, Medicaid, if you have more than $2,000. So let's say that you're going along, you've got Medicaid, and then your parents die, and they leave you $50,000. Well, $50,000 is going to be far above the $2,000 asset limit. So now that you have $2,000, you can no longer qualify for Medicaid. And if you no longer qualify for... if you no longer qualify for Medicaid, then you've got... Yeah, then you get kicked off Medicaid. You have to spend the $50,000 down to the $2,000 level, which, depending on the severity of your medical condition, may or may not be easy and may or may not be, what needs to happen. But what's good for you. But if you have $50,000 and that's going to create a problem for Medicaid, then maybe it's better if you stay on the Medicaid program. And you say, okay, we're going to stay on the Medicaid program. And what we're going to do is we're going to put that $50,000 into a special needs or a supplemental needs trust. So a supplemental needs trust, is usually in connection to qualifying for Medicaid, whereas a special needs trust is qualifying for any other government program and for people who have special needs. And so it's one of those deals that, over time, you might want to create this type of trust because it will allow you to preserve more of the assets. I have a client from several years ago who they had six children, and one of their children had a severe disability and had been living in assisted living for most of their life. And so when the parents died, 1/6 of the assets got left to the disabled child. It was going to be a couple hundred thousand dollars, and that couple hundred thousand dollars would disqualify this lady from receiving government benefits, which were paying for her housing and for her clothing and for her medical care and everything. And we didn't want to just necessarily take $200,000, pay it over the course of a year and a half, and say, okay, well, now we can go reapply for the benefit. You know, that's not quite how we're going to do things. And so I worked with the parents, and we put her $200,000 into a special needs trust or a supplemental needs trust. And that allowed her, so she can still keep her government benefits, but if there's ever a time where, you know, Medicaid isn't exactly known for giving the most creature comforts in life. They're like, okay, we'll pay for your medical care, we'll pay for basic stuff, but, you know, oh, you want a new pair of shoes? Well, you already have a functioning pair of shoes, so we're not sure we need to give that to you. Oh, you want a new shirt because you need a new shirt? Well, if we're paying for everything, you have 7 shirts, they're, you know, we wash them once a week. I don't think we necessarily need to do that. So, you know, this, and, you know, that's not necessarily exactly what Medicaid's going to say, but it's certainly a thing that we have. It's just, you know, they're illustrative things. And so if there's something that, you know, the basic needs are being met by Medicaid or by the other program, then if there's something else that's necessary, you give you can supplement what Medicaid, so Medicaid's meeting basic needs, and then you can supplement those needs to give them a little bit more, just to give them a little bit more, you know, creature comforts, so to speak. And, you know, there are those who would argue that that's taking advantage of a government program and it's somehow immoral and bad and such things. And I, you know, can listen to those arguments on either side and allow my clients to decide, would they rather let the individual continue to live their life the way they did and then maybe have a little bit of extra on top? And, you know, we're not talking, you know, $200,000 isn't like we're going to be like, oh, well, you know, the person who's been disabled for their entire life, all 53 years of it, you know, suddenly we're going to give them $200,000 and they're going to go out and blow it all on a party the level of, you know, what was it? Prince said we should party like it's 1999, right? We're just trying to make sure that there's enough money to pay for what needs to be paid for over the course of a person's lifetime. And so a supplemental needs trust can be a really useful and helpful type of trust. So you are listening to Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey here on 560 KLZ The Source. Also heard on 560thesource.com, the TuneIn app, or 3 other broadcast frequencies of 100.7 FM, 95.3 FM, 1220 AM. Phone number to talk to me on air is 303-477-5600. And my direct line, my phone, is 720-394-6887. So, you know, it's a big type of trust, the special needs trust or a supplemental needs trust. These are also very useful for people who have children who their disability may not be physical or mental. It may be something like a substance abuse problem. And I have plenty of clients who have children who are addicted to various substances, whether they be alcohol or heroin or cocaine or any of these things. I mean, you know, without getting into a discussion of whether or not, you know, substance abuse is a preventable problem, I mean, it's like once we've got somebody who is dependent on a substance, you know, there's whatever treatment facilities there are and treatment statements there are, we can't just say, oh, well, you know, I'm sorry that you're addicted to alcohol and you're an alcoholic, you know, your life is over and we can't ever do anything, you know. We're like, all right, you know, if you're an alcoholic, you're addicted to alcohol, you're a heroin addict, you're a cocaine addict, you're addicted to methamphetamines, you know, any or all of the above. We don't, especially if somebody is trying to recover from that, we want to support them in those efforts, I would think. You know, if you're trying to recover from a substance abuse problem, you know, good for you. You know, keep that fight up. I don't happen to have an addiction to a substance, but I don't necessarily, but that's just because that's been my life story. I haven't run into those type of particular issues. But I have clients who have children and they are addicted to substances. And I have one, I remember from about 6 years ago. And as I was talking to her, she's like, well, I can't leave anything to my kids because one's an alcoholic and one's a heroin addict. And I said, okay, well, that's not going to work very well. But she's like, so I just need to leave it to my grandkids. I'm like, well, how are your kids living? Well, they kind of have a job and one's got an apartment now and they're doing okay. I'm like, well, would you like to support them in those efforts of becoming clean and being able to live? Well, yeah, but I just can't give them a whole bunch of money. I'm like, okay, let's not give them a bunch of money. Let's say that we're going to take the money that you do have, which in their case was significant. It was, they had several hundred thousand dollars in assets. And I said, well, let's put it into, so that it'll go 50-50 to your kids, but it's not going to go to them outright. It's going to stay in trust. And we're going to let the trustee use that money to pay for life for the kids. So we are going to say, okay, if we've got a couple hundred thousand dollars for each child, sounds good. Okay, we've got a couple hundred thousand dollars for each child, and that couple hundred thousand dollars for each child, we say, all right, we've got a couple hundred thousand dollars for each child, but we don't want to give it to them outright. And I love the quote from the mom who said, well, because if I give my child a couple hundred thousand dollars, he's going to come visit me in a couple of days after I die. And I'm like, thinking that the child would either, overdose on heroin or drink themselves to death in a couple of days. And I'm like, well, that is a short time frame, and I can see why we don't want to do that. But because of that, we say, okay, we don't want to have, someone who's addicted to substances, but we're going to say to that person, we're going to say, okay, when your rent is due or when you need groceries, you can talk to the, the trustee, and the trustee can help you pay for them. So, if you've got rent that's due, so, say, hello, Mr. Trustee or Mrs. Trustee, the rent is due. I need you to send $1,000 to my landlord. Okay, we can do that. And in that case, we actually ended up using one of the grandchildren as the trustees. So we had a grandchild who was in charge of the money to pay for both his parents and his uncle's lives, which, is just kind of an interesting turnabout of, parents are trying to take care of their kids, and now we've got kids taking care of the parents, and, that's kind of normal for my line of work and all that type of stuff. But we go, okay, we can make that happen. And so we were able to take care of the adult children who had substance abuse issues without just giving them outright and hoping that it all worked itself out, because sometimes it doesn't all work itself out nearly as well as one would hope. And so, it's just a big thing. And then the huge one that comes up with a lot of my clients is a trust, like either a current trust or a contingent trust for minor children. And a contingent trust is a trust that's set up by a will if your children are minors. So it's things like my children are minors. And most of my assets, if I were to die, are currently tied up in life insurance policies, because life insurance policies are fairly inexpensive for someone young like me, but they pay out a decent amount, in my case, $1.5 million if I were to die. Now, I hope not to die, and I hope not to use those things anytime soon. But if I go, okay, $1.5 million, and I pass away, and then suddenly I'm in a spot where I go, okay, well, I've got $1.5 million, and that money, and my wife and I both die at the same time. Now, if I go $1.5 million that's supposed to be used for my kids who are still minors, if I don't set up a trust for my minor children, then that money is going to be held in conservatorship. And a conservatorship is something that's set up by the courts. And you can appoint a conservator who doesn't have to be a judge or doesn't have to be a court person. But that conservatorship is monitored by the courts. And, you know, a lot of times people would rather have a trusted family member or somebody who can control what happens to the money and doesn't need a probate court to be looking over their shoulder and saying, oh, well, you know, I need to have a conservator here, or I need to have a potential person, you know, that needs to be checked in on, because they can trust their loved one enough to handle things like that. And so you set up a trust for your minor children. You know, I would prefer that, in my case, it's my sister and brother-in-law. I would prefer that they not have to check in with the courts and have the courts looking over their shoulder and saying, oh, well, you know, you spent this money. I'm not sure if we really needed to spend that much money on the kids because of this. I have more belief and more faith in my, I have more faith in my sister and my brother-in-law to know what's best for my kids if they're raising them than I do a court who I don't know. And, you know, and that's me, where I work in the legal profession, and I defer to courts and believe in what they have to say and such things. And so because of that, I have I've set up a contingent trust for my minor children. And that is a huge one that we set up, you know, and I've got things stepped out so that I'm not going to give absolutely everything to my children age 18, because if there's $500,000 per child and they reach age 18 and we write them a check for $500,000, I don't know that that would go so well, because they may not have the kind of maturity to handle it. So basically what I'm saying is that there's lots of different types of trusts. You can have a combination of those trusts to work what's best for you. And they're not necessarily all exclusive and all different types of trusts. So thanks so much for listening to Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey here on 560 KLZ. John Rush and Russ Reason are up next. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll talk to you next week. Thanks. Bye.
Mobile Estate Planning with Michael Bailey will return to ATX next Wednesday at 2:30 here on KLZ 560 The Source, AM 560, FM 100.7, and online at 560thesource.com.
The views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker, commentators, hosts, their guests, and callers. They are not necessarily the views and opinions of Crawford Broadcasting or KLZ management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.